I really love you. But your jealousy is killing me. You hold on so tight. I can't breathe.
That's because I love you so much, though.
Too much?
Come on, that's crazy. Come on.
No, it's not. You have to let go, Mike. If we're gonna make it, then you have to let go a little. I do have another life. A career. A job where I have to talk to men. There's nothing bad with that.
Yeah, but all these guys want is to take you to bed.
So some of them try, so what? You have to trust me.
Who?
Who what?
What guys try? No, are they friends of mine? Do I know these guys?
I didn't say that.
No, are they guys from your work? Did I ever meet them?
Did you hear a word that I said?
What guys? Who are they?
My name is Adam.
And I'm Melissa.
And this is Below Freezing, a podcast in which we talk about films that have a Rotten Tomatoes score of 32% or less. And to maintain the Christmas tradition here at Below Freezing, we're having our regular Christmas guest who's brought along a gift of his own on the podcast. So I'm going to start with... Kieran, welcome back. How are you?
Yes. Hi, guys. Merry Christmas for the third year in a row here at Below Freezing.
Boy, it's 3 years in a row of this.
Yeah. I think one could consider me the Mr. Hanky the Christmas Poo of Below Freezing. I keep popping up every Christmas.
I'd actually like to consider you to be the Jules Calvert of Below Freezing. Somebody who comes in and just leaves a real lasting impression and kind of vanishes with no real end in sight.
No. Yes. But yeah. So this is the third time here, right? And these episodes are like my own little gift of the Magi. I consider year one. With Mixed Nuts, I brought you some myrrh.
Yes.
Year two with Don't Open Till Christmas, you got a little frankincense.
Oh, please.
And this year, I'm planning on bringing pure gold here today.
That's well, right. If by bringing pure gold, you mean our second guest. Yes, indeed, dear listeners, our second guest. And somebody I've potted with quite a bunch, but somebody who's never actually made the Below Freezing airwaves, it is Mike at Cinemas. Mike, how are you doing?
So grateful to be here. Thank you. The family just keeps growing every year.
it sure does. Oh.
Do you have an actor that I've never heard of to compare me to?
Well,
because I just had to Wikipedia James Calvert, so I assume you're talking about the Methodist missionary from the 1800s.
Sure, yes, that's exactly who I mean. You can be the Marco, you can be the Daniel Sujata, the all charm, just coming in, just like cornering Susan Sarandon into forcing to make a decision, and then you leave because hey, this was no skin off your back.
At least you got credited.
So we've been teasing a little bit about what movie we are discussing, and we are discussing the seminal piece from 2004, Noel. Why is it called Noel? No fucking idea. I can't say that there's any trivia to be found that really delves into it. They do
That's
play
a
the
bummer,
song
because I really thought you were gonna
once.
Have...
Oh no, no, I have next to no trivia on this movie. So who picked it and why? Boy, I gotta tell you can put this blame on me, everybody, because I went after movies that were low Christmas rated. But I gotta tell you, what sucked me in was this cast, and we'll get into the cast in a moment, but I was like, this is a movie with this many people that I know, and I have never ever heard of this movie.
Yeah. Did this movie like make it to theaters or?
I'm not even sure it officially made it into the U.S., but we can talk about that too when we get there. Now, this will be fun. So what did we drink to get through this? Now, Melissa, would you like to go first or last?
I will go first. Okay. I'll go last.
Yeah. Okay, great. Kieran, as our returning guest, why don't you lead us off? What did you drink to? What are you drinking now? What did you drink to get through it? What are you imbibing on over there?
Yeah, so I have. When you guys made your first trip out to New York, we all had a little kind of like group session at the Great South Bay Brewery, lovely brewery here on Long Island. So I have their stout, or kind of their winter stout. It's called the Roasty Toasty Stout.
Now,
there it is.
Roasty toasty.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I may have been doing some some digging in my yard the other day, and I may have been listening to the episode on Cimarron. Now, was that what Grant was drinking on that episode?
It absolutely is. Yeah, it absolutely is. And believe it or not, the next day, the beer rep came with samples of it, and it was like, oh, what a coincidence. Grant was just having this the other day, and these are the samples that I'm drinking now.
Oh
so
my
I have
gosh.
That. I have... Some I'm doing some pumpkin clean out the fridging too. So I got some of those to back it up with. So
indeed.
You know, changing of seasons here.
Lovely, lovely. Mike, what do you got? What are you keeping your lips wet with over there? That sounded weird.
That sounded...
I apologize.
And welcome to Below Freezing.
Well, to celebrate the watered down non-movie this is, I'm enjoying myself a tall mug of Swiss Miss, a gift from one of my students with little marshmallows inside of it. So I'm nothing if not a celebrator of the spirit of the
there
season.
You go.
That's great. Melissa's going to be joining you in theory in something here in a moment. So this is going to sound terrible what I'm about to say. I will be drinking for two over the next week or so.
For quite some time, maybe.
So I have a Voodoo Ranger Juicy Haze IPA, kind of a classic from New Belgium. Good. This is not my first beer. It has been a sad day of watching the Seahawks suck ass and watching this movie. So I'm drinking. That's what I'm doing today. Melissa.
Yeah.
What's going on with you?
You know.
Is that a brace on your wrist right now?
I hurt myself. And due to the medication I'm on, I can't drink. So I am enjoying, and let me tell you, this was not the movie to stop drinking to.
I know. We really did not plan that out very well at all.
I am having a cup of warm tea, and it is called...
From our new sponsor, Yogi, this is the Honey Lavender Stress Relief Soothing Serenity Blend. It is caffeine-free, it is an herbal supplement, and it is certified organic. And that's what Melissa's drinking tonight.
Yeah.
So cheers.
So cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
From all over this great country of ours. Okay, so now I'm sure you all inadvertently, you know, if you did no research at all, you might have read the credits, unlike maybe Melissa over here. This is directed by Chaz Palminteri, Academy Award nominated actor Chaz Palminteri. You're looking at me funny.
Wait, who? What?
Chaz Palminteri.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
He is an Italian-American actor.
Okay.
Bullets Over Broadway.
Oh, my God.
I thought that might be the first. He's also in one of my favorite movies, The Usual Suspects.
Okay.
He decided that this would be a sterling film to add to his repertoire of work. He also is in it. He's in it very, very briefly. Did we catch him all as the character of Arizona? He's the guy who Jules goes to get his...
He did look familiar.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was him.
Wow.
That was... Kieran is upset.
Well, I have to deal a lot with Chaz Palminteri around here on New York because he's the Bronx Tale is like his claim to fame. And he does like a one-man show. And he just keeps doing it and doing it. And he's going to basically do it till he drops, I guess. So we get, they usually come around once a year here with that. So, I know it's probably an unpopular opinion, but Bronx Tale doesn't do anything for me. I can take it or leave it.
You know, I've never seen it, both either on film or the one-man show. But only from Long Island can we get takes like that.
Yeah.
Like I don't. Chaz Palminteri and his one man show can go deal with this movie. And then we have Penelope Cruz as Nina and Paul Walker as Mike. They are a couple, engaged to be married. One might say that Paul Walker is a little bit jealous. We'll get into that as we delve into the movie. Susan Sarandon plays Rose, who is a nice lady who has to take care of her mother, who may have Alzheimer's, who may be possessed by a demon. I don't know if we actually know what's wrong with her. But again, maybe we could bring up that as
we need to, yes.
We get through the movie. We have Alan Arkin as Artie Venizelos. That's a last name. I cannot wait to get into talking about this movie and what's going on with Academy Award winner Alan Arkin. Some other people in this. So we have Marcus Thomas, who plays Jules. Some supporting characters. We have Daniel Sunjata, who plays Marco. If anybody watched Rescue Me, he had he's a pretty big part of that. Actually,
and
had a relationship
with Susan Sarandon,
on the show.
Yeah,
that's right.
Because big Rescue Me heads over here. Yeah. So they had a so this had to have been around that same time. John Dorman plays Dr. Barron. Anybody recognize John Dorman from a seminal TV series?
Would be from The Wire. He's Rawls,
right,
on The Wire.
Boom, yeah. Boom. Billy Porter plays Randy, a very stereotypically gay nurse. But go Billy Porter, of Kinky Boots fame. Mm-hmm. And I left out one very important name, because this person went uncredited on the film, and that would be Academy Award winner Robin Williams playing Charlie Boyd. And the very limited research that I could find on this movie, I think he chose to be uncredited as kind of a favor to Chaz, good old Chaz. So this would normally be the portion of the show where we talk about accolades. There are none. There are none whatsoever. This would also then be closely followed by the part where we have Melissa guess crazy numbers with budget and box office and shit. Those really don't exist either. But just out of just sheer fun, so nowhere could I find what the U.S. box office was. So what I have are international numbers. I'm going to give you four countries. Everybody can guess in this game.
Okay.
Out of these four countries, I want you to tell me which country loved this movie the most by showing up for it and giving their money at the box office. Here are the countries: Turkey, Italy, Greece, or Finland.
Oh, Italy.
Okay, Melissa's locking in that. You can all guess. You don't have to guess separate choices.
I think Greece.
I was also going to say Italy.
Italy is correct. Apparently, at the end there, it grossed. Now, here's where numbers get a little interesting to me, because apparently at the end of its run in Italy, it made about $2,058,000. But when you look at its total international box office, it made $2,280,000. And this is on Box Office Mojo, so I actually don't know what it made in the U.S. Now, when we were watching the movie, I clocked this, and I thought this was really interesting. It starts off by saying this was produced by the Convex Group, which is not a name I've ever seen before any movie, ever. It apparently, Convex Group is an investment fund company. I don't think it really has anything to do with movies. So I think maybe the biggest producing body of this film were just rich people with money. So you know that's good. You also know your movie is good when there are six people credited for the casting by section.
Oh, okay. I did notice that.
I had that too.
I did notice that.
That was incredible. There was also, I think, at least one. Okay, there was one other name of note in the credits that wasn't related to acting. Did anybody, Mike, did you spot it?
I did. Okay.
Was it sound?
No, it's not sound. I think Karen knows who it is.
Is it the 8-time Oscar winner Alan Menken?
It sure is.
Did the score.
Oh, I did. Oh, my wife even called it out, and I've already forgotten.
Alan Menken of Aladdin and other fame was tasked with scoring this beautiful film.
Wait, I just said that.
What?
I just said sound.
Scoring. That's not the same thing. We had this conversation yesterday.
In my head it is.
No, it's not. It is not the same thing.
Partial credit.
Well, thank you.
You're nice. That's the teacher in you, Mike.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, there was pause there was because I took a sip of the beer. Here's the amazing thing, though. As unseen as it feels like this movie was, Ebert reviewed it. This actually garnered a Roger Ebert review. He gave it 2 stars. Seems like a few stars too many to me. And his review ends with this paragraph. Only a cynic could dislike this movie, which may be why I disliked it. I can be sentimental under the right circumstances, but the movie is such a calculating tearjerker that it played like a challenge to me. There's a point at which the plot crosses an invisible line, becoming so preposterous that it's no longer moving, and it just plain weird. If it's this much trouble to be happy on Christmas, then maybe Rose should consider doing what Susan Sontag does every year, which is fly to Venice all by herself and walk around alone in the fog and the mist and cross lonely bridges all over dark canals and let the chill seep into her bones and then curl up in bed in an empty hotel with a good book. It's a kind of judo technique. You use loneliness as a weapon against itself.
Oh, my God.
I love that Ebert went to this much trouble to write a great concluding paragraph to a movie like this. That's just amazing. Well, now we get to the guessing portion of the game. We're normally just Melissa, but now our guests, if they haven't looked at it, can try to guess the critical and audience Rotten Tomatoes score. Here is the blurb. Noelle strains for holiday uplift, but despite the involvement of an outstanding ensemble cast, settles for treacly sentiment instead. Mike, as our newest guesser of Rotten Tomato scores, I will have you go first. Critical and then audience.
Okay. For critical, because it takes place on Christmas Eve, I want to lock in a 24 for that. I feel there's enough chumps in the audience. I want to say... 38 for audience.
24 and 38. We got it in there. Okay. Kieran, what do you believe?
I mean, this is like where this gets hard because like I can't imagine anybody giving this like a positive review. So how could it be higher than zero? You know, I just don't get it. Like, I know that's not how this necessarily works. So I'll go 14.
Okay. All right.
And audience... How about also 14? We'll go double 14s out here.
Double 14. I like it. Okay, Melissa.
Okay. Well, I also said 14 for critical.
Oof.
And I thought this would be like a teen at first, like teen, like in the teens for both of them. But then I was like, there's too many celebrities. We've probably got too many people. So I said 31. I think this is still one. That is under, like, critical and audience is both
under.
Oh,
gotcha. Okay, so the winner of the critical score is Mike. What? Mike said 24. The score was 28. 28 Ooh. Critical.
Damn.
On this. And then for the audience score, the winner, also Mike.
What?
Mike said 38.
I mean, congratulations. What?
The answer, the audience score, 48%.
Okay.
I don't.
So, it blew my mind you guys went so low because never underestimate that folks around Christmas time, no matter how sentimental and poorly made and milquetoast a movie is, if it's semi-uplifting, if it's got celebrities in it, there's people who this is their comfort movie.
Wow.
Well, I don't know if have you watched any of our other Christmas movies we've done?
I have not.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Except for Four Christmases. That was a treat. Yes. I enjoyed Four Christmases.
Wow, okay. I'm shocked.
So the only other piece of like, I guess, trivia that I would mention is at some point, Melissa, I think it was the moment where Susan Sarandon is about to have a It's a Wonderful Life moment where she thinks she's going to throw herself into the water. And you were like, this is not New York.
I was like, they don't have ice in their water like that. Do you in New York? Does it get that cold? You have that much? Like, that looked like one of the Great Lakes.
In Manhattan, the bodies of water out there, I haven't seen them frozen over like that. Yeah, that seems like a little bit of a stretch. I mean, I don't think like the, you know, the East River freezes. But
sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I also was like, no, not New York. Would you be walking on a pier alone in the dark like that? I just feel like you wouldn't be doing that in New York.
Listen.
I mean, you could try. It's not a good idea. But.
It was great. You mentioned the Great Lakes, and maybe this film seems like it might have been shot in Canada, because it was. It was shot in Montreal, which, of course, is just a dead ringer for New York City.
Right. Well, and that would make sense why there was some ice in...
It would also make sense why in multiple scenes, actors look like they are about to die.
Yeah.
That last scene between Paul Walker and Penelope Cruz, the breath is just coming out of their mouth. That must have been absolutely painful to shoot. Okay, so but I'm going to do my best to try to explain what is happening in this movie, but I don't know that I will. So I'm going to do it very, very cheekily. So we have some interesting... plot lines happening. I'd say there's probably three. So we have Penelope Cruz and Paul Walker. They are a couple engaged to be married. Penelope Cruz has a friend who's a tree decorator, and they're trying to get pregnant, and they're going to get married in 1 week from today, which is to get married on New Year's Eve, which is really pretentious. And Paul Walker is a cop who goes to meet his cop buddy at a cafe of sorts, and Alan Arkin believes that Paul Walker is the reincarnated version of his dead wife. We hear more about that later. We also have Susan Sarandon, who is a lovely, lovely, very, very, very sexy 40, but really in her 50s woman who will not have sex with Daniel Sunjata, but might have sex with the guy from The Wire, and has a mom who is a demon, but we'll just say she has Alzheimer's.
I'm pretty
sure. And she's sad and doesn't know what to do, but very kind of happenstancingly runs into Robin Williams, and they have a relationship that doesn't really exist, and we'll get into why later. And then, of course, the most important through line of this whole movie revolves around Jules, who wants to be admitted into the hospital on Christmas Eve because that's where the shit's going down in New York.
That's where the best Christmas party
is. I think I nailed it. I think I nailed that.
You did a fantastic job.
I'm really happy with how that turned out.
Wow.
Mike, you've been pleasantly reserved. I would love for you to maybe
start us off. Yeah, where are we going? Let's talk.
We can go anywhere.
Literally. Oh, but only if it's between New York and Montreal, because that's all our budget allows for. So that's
I want to talk about Jules. How old do you guys estimate this character is supposed to be?
Oh wow. You know, I mean, the
mid-20s.
That's what I'm thinking as well. I could go as old as 29, but I don't.
He's probably like in his mid.
I really hope this guy is not above 30.
Mid-20s.
Okay.
Okay. 27, so, 28, let's say.
Okay, so if we average him, he's 27, 28. Let's go with that. So this guy's been through some shit.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy took, by our estimate, 14 years to weed through his trauma of having an abusive stepfather. Yeah. And decided...
And who was abandoned by his mom.
Substance abuse.
He was abandoned by his mom.
Yeah, he's been abandoned by his mom. He's kind of coasted over all that and then waited 14 years, mind you.
Sounds right.
And then I like how Adam put it, and decided, you know what's going to fix it all? There was a really good Christmas party in the ER that most terrible night of my life. I'd like to go back there and recapture that moment. I'm going to hit reset in that moment. Can we also address that to get your hands broken in Manhattan, you've got to know a guy who knows a guy who knows the best handbreaker in New York?
Who knows Chaz Palminteri, who's dressed like Dracula under a bridge, and he's going to smash your hands so you can enter the hospital.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I just feel like you could go under any random bridge with $20 and say, hey, guys, can you help me out?
Just break your own hand.
I don't think you need to do this Da Vinci Code shit of, like, going through the network.
I realized early on that this was going to be a movie where people kind of intersected, and they do that fairly early on that's going to happen. And then they even attempt it with Jules because they have Paul Walker sit next to him for like 13 seconds. But it was one of those things where the movie is coming to an end and things are, you know, I having some kind of a resolution. And he just walks out of the hospital and looks up. And that is literally the end of his storyline. The movie ends with that. That's it. I think we are meant to make the assumption that he has called his mom and maybe had some kind of something or other. But like this movie, everything else in this movie is so on the nose that the fact that we don't have even him like dial and go, "Mom," like we didn't even get that.
No.
You know what I mean? Like
I was waiting for them to tell us who his mom was. Like, I was going through the characters. I'm like, I think we've run out of characters. I don't think there's another Oscar winner in here who's playing his mom in this thing. And then I was thinking, you know, is there like an end credit scene or something that I missed?
Did you watch
and then
it?
I decided I didn't. Nah, I decided I didn't care. Yeah.
The end credit scene is probably he's still waiting. It's like New Year's Eve. He's still outside that hospital. Mom has abandoned him once again. Like, didn't show up. I hate to laugh about that, but I'm like, yeah, this character, I have to say, the scene with the psychiatrist, is that who it was?
Yes.
And she's like, let's unpack your entire life right now. And she was like he's unpacking it. And then she's like, well, you should call your mom. I mean, you should. You should. And it's like, I'm sitting there going, this can't, she's not real. How traumatizing is this for this man?
I like to just, while we're on that, the medical personnel of this hospital. I like the one nurse who, when Susan Sarandon gets there, and she's like, oh, well, you know, Mr. So-and-so and his visitor. Oh, no, he never has any visitors. And she just moves on. Yeah. It's like, what, nurses don't speak like that.
Here's his full name.
Well, what about
oh, no, no one visits him.
And the nurse, when Paul Walker shows up at the hospital and he's like, can you tell me about so-and-so? And she's like, no, are you family? And then the other guy, what did the other nurse say? He's
not
her
family, but he's with him or something.
Yeah,
it
but
was,
then what did he call the other nurse? He called her
Nurse Ratchet. Yeah.
Oh, Nurse Ratchet.
Like,
yeah.
Holy shit. But I don't know. For some reason, I was like, I bet that stuff goes down in a hospital.
Now, now with the Nurse Ratchet comment, wouldn't have been in something if Jules' mom was played by the one and only Louise Fletcher. Now, that would have been something. That would have
been. There's your fifth Oscar winner.
Adam.
But sadly,
you
no.
Been a part of this.
How do you know I wasn't? I was in Montreal at the time. That's not true. I have never been to Montreal.
Man.
Okay. So yeah, we've got Jules who so desperately wants his hand to get broken. Kind of has a mini freak out. I also I like the hospital's psychiatrist who I'm sure is A, getting paid lots of money and B, cares about every single person that comes through her door. Is so like obviously against him from the beginning. Like, hey, you know what? But what about your mom?
Yeah.
He's like, I was 14. He's like, yeah, but your mom.
That's what I'm saying. And then she's like,
did you stop to consider?
And then she's like, call him. And she leaves the room like, oh my God.
That was great.
What? No.
Well, thus embodying the whole movie's problem of everybody's horrible trauma gets resolved in a scene with just a quick little exchange of dialogue with characters who just know all the magic buttons to push, and the characters will go along with it. Like you said, Melissa, it's been half his life. He's never met this therapist, but he's instantly like, yeah, here's my full story. I'll tell you everything. I'll go like, this is clearly somebody who's avoided therapy for half their life, and now he's just
this clearly is somebody that's like, you're going, they need to be checked in somewhere. Like, this isn't somebody you're letting walk out of the hospital, in my opinion.
Yep. I don't know how much more we could talk about Jules. I'm just glad we started there. Because
we could probably spend the entire podcast.
Because he's quite the character. Kieran, where do you want to take us next?
I'd like to talk some Paul Walker, if we could talk.
Let's
some Paul
do
Walker.
It.
Please.
So this, I mean, listen, all the characters in this are pretty paper thin as they're drawn out for us. I'm sure this script was probably written on the back of a napkin somewhere.
Wait, hold on. I got to tell you some of the names of things that this guy, the guy who wrote it, his name is David Hubbard. He has written only a few things that are on IMDb, but with great names such as Delivering Milo, Widow Detective, and Reckoning. Those seem to be really good. Delivering Milo with a very young Anton Yelchin performance. So let's talk about Paul Walker. Sorry, I just wanted to say the names of some of these great other pieces of art that were created.
Yeah, so Paul Walker is playing our token jealous boyfriend cop with the thick New York accent that only he has in the movie because he's the worker. He's the cop.
He has it and he doesn't.
Yes. This conversation that Penelope Cruz and him have, has any couple in the history of romance ever had this type of conversation where she's explaining to him, you know, I don't appreciate, you know, your jealousy, yada, yada, yada. She puts it and he goes, which guys, huh? Well, let me at him. I mean, dude, come on. Like, this is your fiance pretty much saying we may end this here if we don't figure this out. And your response is, but which guys? I want names. You show them and you double, triple down on the jet.
I love that you bring up that moment because I pulled another quote that he says, because after all of that, after he does the whole, let me at him, he goes, it's because I love you so much. Which is then followed by my note. I go, Paul Walker's character is just awful. Now, Melissa, from time to time, you will look at me and say, I wish you would get jealous more. Jealous like that? I'm just what's the range of jealousy you'd like me to hit in the realm of this? Like 50% of that?
No. That was a lot. It's like... I don't know. I guess you just trust me so much. Like, I could do anything, and Adam would be like, what?
Okay, well, anything is a strong
word. Which isn't a bad thing. But, like, yes, I think there's a certain, a little jealousy sometimes I think is nice in a relationship. But, like, nothing like this. Nothing like this. Like, I probably will say don't ever be jealous again.
Okay, all right, gotcha.
Was anyone else confused when we were introduced to these two characters?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm not alone here in that. I couldn't... It took me like maybe three scenes of them to figure out what was going on with them.
Well, and it's
for a movie that leans on exposition so hard, that shouldn't be a problem.
Well, and it's so funny because the last movie that we covered was Four Christmases, which also opens with like a sort of role-playing scene, except for you almost immediately know that they're doing it to have fun, right? This scene starts and I'm thinking this is a cop abusing his position as a police officer.
Those, like, some of my first notes I was like, okay, I already have problems with this movie, and then I had to cross them out because I was like, well, okay, I guess.
Oh yeah, it's all smooth sailing once that's right, yeah. Then we're totally on board with
him. I don't know,
great fella.
No, it was very confusing.
No, I'm about on that same record, Kieran. I was like continually asking my wife, like, do they know each other or don't? She was like, they do, and I was just like, are you sure?
I gotta say though, and I don't know if this is too early to be talking saviors.
No, do it. Throw it out there.
It feels like all of the esteemed actors in this movie like kind of got together on the side. And we're like, all right, no one's going to use your Oscar award-winning skills here in this thing. All right, just play it down the middle. But they didn't invite Penelope Cruz because Penelope Cruz is the only one who's doing any kind of real emoting in this movie. Like, you can see her skills as an actress at work here with how she's handling her paper-thin character.
I want to double down on that, actually. And I would like to include Paul Walker because...
Well, he wasn't invited either because he didn't win an Oscar.
But that's what I mean, though. On the who they left out of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I got to be honest, there's this scene where Paul Walker is like talking to a comatose Alan Arkin and has actual tears in his eyes. And I at one point,
tear up?
I sure did. There was actually a moment, though, where I thought, everybody feels like they're trying to an extent. Like, now I do think that Alan Arkin and Robin Williams are just kind of like, they're on autopilot and it's fine.
Yeah.
Susan Sarandon, I don't think could have given a shit less.
She was treading in the open water. Like they gave her nothing to work with.
Well, oh, that's and, not, and now. Her, now I'm gonna hard disagree with that, Melissa. Can you? I don't know why I'm making you tell this. I would like for you to explain how Susan Sarandon wins the contest at the bar by saying what the worst why Christmas why she hates Christmas. Do you mind?
I have to explain it?
Well, I guess to the best of your ability. I don't know why I've thrown that on you.
Well, I just think that whole scene, it was set up where it's supposed to be like kind of funny, you know, right? Like, did anybody else read into this? Like, well, this was supposed to be kind of like the guy singing in the bar. What is he singing?
Oh,
like,
he's doing a really bad version of something, but it's stupid funny. Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we've got a lot of people here that are kind of like bah humbugs, you know, to Christmas. And so let's kind of hear it. And the way she starts her story, like, I mean, it's sad that it happened to her, but the way she told it was really just kind of like, it just didn't seem right. Like, you know what I mean? Like the way it was written into the script, mm-hmm, like,
mm-hmm. And what story would that be?
It would be that she lost her baby on Christmas Day.
Well, and I think you definitely cut to the chase. The way that the story unfolds is that she had a baby, had the name, all the good stuff, and then the baby born and died because of a crazy heart thing that happened. Yeah. And then some guy in the bar, clearly a wonderful human being, was like, I don't get it. What does that have to do with Christmas? And then she's like, oh, well, because she was born and died on Christmas. And then everybody gets like real sad. I got to be honest. Outside of Jules in general, that moment was the most egregious because I was so mad that they decided to just throw that in there.
Yeah, it just didn't seem. What was that? I love Susan Sarandon, but that whole speech, I was just like, not. There wasn't anything there for me as a woman, at least, to be sitting there and like grab onto. It was just kind of like it felt not right.
And how does a bar?
Can I also ask a question in terms of like what I have a problem with this in terms of it being a screenwriting construct, and maybe I like am too naive, but just thinking about like the practicality of this game, like you guys said, it's set up to be fun. It's a bunch of people who are out; they don't have a place to go on Christmas. They're bah humbug. But like, what to me, this game, like, there's no other end to this story. If you win by saying like the saddest, worst thing, like, how does this game not end every year with somebody sharing a story like that? Or like, oh, my fiance cheated on me. Like, how does this end with somebody winning for this story that everyone's like,
doesn't this sound like the beginning of the Aristocrats joke? You know what I mean? Where it's like, here's the setup, and then you come in and you just say the most awful thing that you can think of, and then Christmas, right? Like, I just there's just something I don't know. I like, right, because it's like somebody goes up there like, well, one Christmas, you know, my mother, you know, she had diabetes and then this and then that, and it's like, I don't know, you could just think of the most random awful thing to say, but then somebody gets up there and like seemingly puts her whole, you know, like her worst personal story out there. I just
and you know what, I don't know why, but I love the name of the movie, Noel.
Oh, God.
That is my middle name, and I love it. And I'm a Christmas baby. I was born 7 days before Christmas. I was thinking she was going to say her daughter, Noel, or something.
Sure, yeah. Tie it in.
Like,
somehow.
Like, do something. And then she didn't even do that. And I was like, you're not even going to give us that? Like, this whole movie, I'm like, where's the Noel? How does that make sense? And then I was trying to think... what is it called where you have like a word and then each letter means something? What is that called?
Oh, an acronym.
An acronym. I was like, are all their names in the acronym? No, they didn't even do that. Like, why didn't they make all the people's names? Because we had a Nina. I was like, oh, that's the N. And I was like, you know what I mean?
Sure. That you're already putting way more thought into it than I think David Hubbard did.
I probably spent most of this movie trying to think of like, how are we tying these people into the name Noel? Did that not bother anybody else?
That we don't know why it's called Noel?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it bugged me.
Yeah, I mean, it's about as lazy of a Christmas name as it gets for a Christmas movie,
oh,
right?
My
just
God.
slap the Christmas sticker on it, and that's that.
Ugh.
Yeah, you just got to market it as a Christmas movie.
What's a better name for this movie? Okay, you ready? Jesus's Birthday or The Worst Christmas Story.
Oh, I was thinking like it's not such a wonderful life. I don't know. Like there was a few like wonderful life moments, like the Angels, you know.
Oh, sure. Oh, and Robin...
I saw a few bells. They didn't ring it, but I saw bells.
Okay, good.
You know?
Good. Yep.
Something saving her from jumping. That was the moment. Let's get back to this, actually. Oh, it's my turn. Can we talk about something?
Miracle at the East River.
Sure.
I didn't understand much of this movie. I was trying to connect the dots and figure out what makes sense here. But what I did catch on to was I knew we had, spoiler alert, like a Sixth Sense moment here. And I was like, I don't think Robin Williams' character is real. Well, you actually said it first. And then I said, I think he's the guy in the bed. And then you were like, you gave me a look.
Well, I think
like I was wrong.
I think it all started when they very craftily had Robin Williams sitting behind a door.
So some part of me wanted so bad for him to just not appear in the movie again, and that was just it. And they never explained.
That's
it.
That's what I thought.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's what we have here.
Well, that
also is he like a genie too? Like, does he like grant wishes? Like, he like granted her a wish. He's like, "What do you want?" She's like, "I want to get through the night." He's like, "That's an easy one."
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar, but when you go into a coma, you are capable of astral projecting for a little while.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That's great. And see, so I think our friend Jules was asking for the wrong thing. He wanted his hand broken. He needed to be put into a coma. That's what he needed. Talk about it.
Holy shit, is Chaz Palminteri not real?
Maybe he was the other genie. It's the three genies.
Man.
Yes.
God, so then what do we say about the terrifying ghost at the end of the movie? What's her name's mom? Like,
oh, my God. Okay, listen.
Pazuzu.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Pazuzu's petals.
I hate laughing at this kind of stuff, but like it's sad that her mom is in the hospital and has Alzheimer's. Like it's sad.
Of course.
At first, the first part we laughed at the same time. It's doing this like montage of like zooming in and out of just like clips, and then all of a sudden it like zooms in on the mom, just like, eyes open, just like that, like staring at, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Oh my God. And then it went back to like scenic shots and we were laughing so hard. But like at the end, when we see her again, she's like super pale and like glossy blue eyes. It totally looked like
the
creature from The Nun or something. It freaked me out.
The cuts were awful because the first one you're talking about, like, we're seeing a picture of the mom when she's younger, smiling and happy, and then they crossfade to just on her face looking miserable as shit. And like, well, that's a terrible cut. But at the end, it's like, yeah, Susan Sarandon is like, we're gonna have a great Christmas. It'll be awesome. I love you, mom. And they cut to her and she's just like And I don't know why they chose to do that.
I don't know.
And then they zoom out to the CGI window with the with the snow going by. Tough stuff. At least she finally ate the salmon in the end, though. You know, that was a concern of mine.
Oh, did she eat salmon?
I don't know. She was eating something at the end.
Oh, okay.
But they bought all this. Well, she bought all this nice salmon.
I
for
almost
her,
hope know? She wasn't eating the salmon because I don't think that was refrigerated. And that would have been left out for a couple hours. God.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about.
We've set up all of the major. Well, we haven't yet, actually. There's one more through line we kind of have to get to, but.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, let's go back and talk about the tree decorator.
Okay, sure. Yes. So I'm going to set up a little bit.
Yeah.
So after our wonderfully set up role playing section, where we know that that's happening, Paul Walker, I think, takes Penelope Cruz to like work and immediately gets upset because she is hugging and kind of kissing a gentleman in the entryway of a building.
And let me say, that was a very long hug, like inappropriately long. Like if you didn't know what was happening, but like if your partner saw that, I think that was a little too long of a hug. Right? Can we all say that or not? I don't know.
It definitely was kind of leading the audience in a in a way, I guess. But I'm still confused because I'm like, didn't Paul Walker just meet her? Like, why does he care this much?
Well, you know, fair. Where,
this is not his right to be possessive here.
Yeah. So then, yeah, we get back to the apartment and Paul Walker. They're there in the apartment. And it looks like maybe she just got done having sex with this person. Like, that's immediately what I thought in my head, because I was like, she's changed clothes. He's looking a little too happy putting that tinsel on a tree. First of all, nobody looks that happy putting tinsel on a tree. Just have to say. Has anybody done it? I have.
They do if they're a professional.
Yeah.
So then Paul Walker's character comes in and just like chucks him across the room.
I mean, that poor tree is never going to be the same.
No.
Yeah. No.
And then we find out he's a tree decorator. And it's like, duh, of course, like, because that's a profession,
so there's two questions.
They make house
there's
calls.
Two questions that I think arise from this scene, which one being, does anybody know any professional tree decorators? Because I don't.
I also do not.
I mean, I like to call myself one around Christmas time, but I actually don't. I've never called myself a professional tree decorator, but I will now. Because I told Adam, I said, anybody ever goes, this is my friend who's a tree decorator, you instantly know some shady shit is happening because nobody is a tree decorator. Like, I was like, instantly, I was like, oh, yeah, she's cheating on him. Like, that, I just thought we were just going to not like the Penelope Cruz character because I was like, nobody says that.
Which, and this kind of leads to my second question, which is kind of a two-parter. So the first part of my question is, Penelope Cruz is doing this as a surprise for Paul Walker. Is this really what he wants for Christmas? Is the tree decorated by a professional? This is the big surprise.
Well,
yes. Charlie Brown's Christmas tree decorated by a tree director.
I mean, I believe it.
Really?
Well, like, I don't know. I got you a gift. When did I get you that thing that you cook pancakes on? What is it called?
The griddle?
The griddle. I bought you that for like your birthday or Father's Day or something, but really it was a gift for me. But I got it for you.
Okay, but here's the thing.
So though, I could, maybe that's what she wanted.
But the thing about it is that's a practical gift that I use every Sunday. What I was getting at with that though is that Paul Walker is a aggressive, jealous New York police officer. I don't think that a decorated tree is high on his list, which really leads me to believe, which leads me to the final part of this question, which is, how long do you think that marriage is going to last? Because I think it is not long.
I would agree. I would agree. I was not moved by his speech in the freezing cold streets of Montreal, New York, by the way. You know, as long as you're happy, I'm happy, even though if you don't have to be with me, you could be doing your own thing happy, and I'll be happy for you, because happiness, your happiness, is what matters. I'm going to go now. I'll be in my apartment. If you're not there by 3, I'm going to come find you.
No, he'll be fine, man. He can always go back to Alan Arkin.
That's right.
He's got a very comfortable life there waiting in the wings.
It's right. His soulmate is a diner owner. Who makes him almond cookies? What is it? Almond butter
almond
cookies.
Almond butter is his favorite.
Now,
I
gotta say, now I know this is a couple of years before the kind of Alan Arkin renaissance happens. You know, he'll win the Oscar for Little Miss Sunshine in a couple of years after this. And not that Alan Arkin wasn't like a nobody when this movie came out, but I don't think anybody's clamoring for Alan Arkin in 2004. But like, I don't know, man. Is Chaz Palminteri either the nicest guy in Hollywood, or does he know just the most shit on people? Because the talent in this glorified Hallmark movie is incredible. I mean, it is astounding, the people who are even just playing a scene or two.
Well, you know, kindness goes a long way.
it sure does.
So maybe. But it is Hollywood, so maybe he also knows all the shady shit too.
Yes, and we should also call attention that this is Chaz Palminteri's only directing. He did not get another shot at this, so he might have had a bunch of people, you know, he might have talked people into doing things that they regret. Let's put it that way.
The story writing the story writing. Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Sure. Just was awful. I mean, insane.
Even worse than awful. Insane. Yeah. Like, literally like, insane.
I usually don't even, like, typically scripts don't bother me because I'm just like, yay, they're saying words. People are happy. And I'm like, okay with it. But this was bad. I thought, a few times I asked Adam, is this a student, like a high school student film? Maybe. Just of how things were, like, shot, like the even like the how camera angles and like how it was zoomed in, but the script in particular, I'm like, they're trying to get us to feel something for these poorly written characters. And when you have Penelope Cruz's character that's like talking to Susan Sarandon, where she's like, I might be pregnant, but I'm not sure, and the doctors told me that I wouldn't be able to have kids, and I'm like, okay, but like, why? Or are these even doctors that are telling you, like, why can't you have kids? Like, they're not, they're just saying things, but not giving any backstory. And that's kind of like the same reason why I had the issue with like Susan Sarandon's story at the bar. It just was like, you're saying these words, but there isn't anything actually behind it that's making us go, oh, holy shit. Like, where it really hits and sticks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we're all trying to figure out what bar would host an event like this on Christmas too. Like, we can't get past that, let alone her stupid story.
Yeah.
But, sorry.
So, go ahead.
I had a story in my head for how this went down because the screenplay bothered me a lot. And I kind of, the story I've told myself is that in the wake of Love Actually being like a pretty big hit the year before, all of a sudden there's like a clamoring for the knockoff, like intersecting stories at Christmas time. And David, what's his name?
Hubbard, yes.
David Hubbard sitting in his apartment and says, hey, I have that drawer of like short stories I just write when I black out occasionally. What if I like took all those and mashed them into a screenplay and I make all those characters meet each other? I think I might have something here. And he turned it in and some suit said, like, we could make this cheap enough. We got the next Love Actually. Let's do it.
Oh, my God. Something like that had to have happened with this.
I mean, and Montreal got on board immediately. They were like, yes, please, shoot that here.
Yeah.
Pretend we're New York.
Oh, my God. What else? Jesus.
Well, it's never good when you take note. Because a lot of the notes I take when we do this are very silly. Like, I'll write something and be like, ha, ha, ha. I probably won't even say this on the podcast, right? So when we have that scene at the diner where Paul Walker is meeting his partner and Alan Arkin is like really staring him down. So when I write a note that says, does Alan Arkin want to fuck him? And then it kind of ends up being true. Like, at no point should that note have been relevant at all.
Yeah. They used a lot of gay panic humor in this movie. That was like one of the very 2004.
Yes.
But like just leaning into all that. And the Arkin thing, and they totally, you know, kept it going too. Like, so I'm sitting here saying, where are they going with this? What are we doing here? And then he goes to his house and he's sitting and waiting, and they cut to another scene and they come back and he's been sitting there and still hasn't told Paul Walker. And then he tells him and I go, wait, what? Reincarnation? What just happened? Now it's not just a Hallmark movie anymore. Now it's just actually insane.
Well, and I was confused because I was like, wait, is this like a weird time warp thing? Like, is that supposed to be him?
Susan Sarandon was in this movie. She could have done the time warp. Well, taken too many steps to the left and jumped too far to the right and then ended up in this fucking movie. Right?
But like, was that not weird? I mean, I still feel like how, like, the Alan Arkin character, I'm like confused. I can't even put thoughts together. This is strange. This is a new moment for me to not be able to speak like this. I thought Alan Arkin was, you know, what's his name? Paul Walker, but in the future. Did anybody else think that? Because I was like, wait, these stories seem too familiar. And then the angel, wasn't that the same angel that broke off the tree that he knocked the guy back in at their house? So then I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. That never comes into play. But was that not some like.
Well, I'll let one of our esteemed guests take that one.
It ain't gonna be me because I have no fucking clue. Like,
I'm
still like I told you, we let up this call. I'm broken from this movie.
I desperately want it to be true that Paul Walker actually is Alan Arkin's wife reincarnated, because this movie can't decide when it wants to commit to the magic happening. Like, Robin Williams is doing his thing, but everybody else is just stuck in this, like, miserable sort of reality where, I mean, there's still a bit too many coincidences, but, like, I could have really done with, like, more insane magical stuff happening on Christmas Eve. It would have been
fair.
It would have been, like, watchable.
Right. Right.
Well, and we talked about the screenplay a little bit. So I think the fact that, and I understand that there's probably meant to be, I mean, obviously the parallel between Alan Arkin's character and Paul Walker's character, Alan Arkin's character being jealous and similar story, and the wife drives off and she dies in an accident, and like, oh, that's supposed to be life altering for Paul Walker. But it does feel like a little like the writer was like, oh, yeah, yeah, and then that, we're going to make that the thing. I mean, it happens early on in the movie. Susan Sarandon, you know, like you do, runs into a high school friend she hasn't seen in 40 years and is like, and her friend's like, oh, I'm married to this guy. Of course, we have two beautiful girls. We live in Connecticut, all these things. And then later on, Susan Sarandon's assistant goes, your ex-husband called, and he said to tell you that him and his beautiful wife and their daughters are in Connecticut. And I was like, did the writer forget that he just said that?
Well, and I was
somebody
so confused.
Just said that.
I was so confused. And yeah, so I'm convinced that they're like, we're only going to think once in this entire movie. So if we have a thought and we like it, we're just going to continue it. Like, everybody has an ex that lives in Connecticut with two daughters. That's it.
We have a character in this movie who pays someone to break his hand so he could participate in a hospital Christmas party on Christmas night. And it's not played for humor.
Because when he was 14, all the nurses were taking shots out in the hall. What else was he saying? I was like, this doesn't happen at all.
I'm pretty sure.
And then he's in the emergency room and there's like a gunshot wound. He's like, this isn't very Christmassy.
He's like, wait, what? Yeah. Well, you know what else was creepy was when he was staring down that, like, he was just so sad and reminiscent when he was staring at that, like, little boy with his mom who had a broken leg, and he's just standing there in the hall.
I think, like, I think when Jules was explaining why he wanted to go there, I think I slipped into the same plane that Robin Williams' character was on, because I didn't hear any of that. I really didn't. I was so baffled by what was going on. Jules.
I may have just witnessed the worst movie I've ever seen, and I'm having an existential crisis over here. I just want you guys to know that. Like, it's, this is, and I wanted to say too, I forgot to say this in the beginning. Last Christmas when I was on here, I touted doing the true Melissa Below Freezing experience, but that was negated because I had watched the trailer before, so I didn't. Today, I did the true Melissa St. John experience. Credits rolled, and I hopped on the Zoom, and I knew nothing going into this thing, so that's why I'm still a little rattled and broken over here, so. True Melissa St. John.
It takes me a while to shake these videos, these movies sometimes.
Now, Mike, I sent a message earlier in the week, just kind of like telling you guys what to, you know, don't look at the score and come with a savior and what the film's missing. And you said you had seen at least part of it. So I think you've been sitting with this the longest.
Yeah, I have.
So a couple times. I could just hear the disdain in your voice. What? So. Because it's, you've kind of been maybe the furthest removed from it. What sticks with you the most from it? Like other than it's not great. Like, what specifically from the movie, like, is with you still?
Okay, I'll come about this in a roundabout way as only I can do. That first of all, my big, like, still seething, like, I hate you, Adam St. John, is I wish it was a worse movie because I'd have, like, more to talk about. I think really my beef with it is like, none of it is good. I think, like, I could say a lot of it's terrible, but none of it is terrible in a way that is, like, fun or sticks with me. It's a movie that wallows in analyzing human misery, not understanding any of that misery or any of the humanity or struggle behind it, and then offering pat, hallmarky solutions really quick to wrap things up, to cash in on, like, it's a Christmas movie and, you know, middle-aged folks will just pay to go because they want uplifting. Like, it's weird for me to say this, but, like, it just felt so middle-of-the-road bad and forgettable to me that I was just like, I wish it was worse. So, in perspective, the night after I finished Noelle, I went to a friend's who wanted me to watch Tom Hooper's Cats. I don't know if any of you have seen Tom Hooper's
No,
Cats.
We have not.
That's the newest one, right?
It's the only one.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. I used to watch, like, the Broadway version.
This is the infamous one. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a train wreck. You guys should absolutely cover it. I came on here, like, pissed I couldn't talk about Cats, because now thinking back to, like, Noelle, I'm like, I don't know, like, nobody acts in it, there's no feeling, it's just badly written, like, there's just nothing there. That's what pisses me off, is, like, it doesn't have the guts to just be batshit crazy and awful so that it's at least, like, in that realm of watchable because it's so insane. Like, to me, it's milquetoast insane.
But, like, is this movie that forgettable after watching it? Because now all I'm thinking of is, like, how the fuck was this movie made? Because I'm just like, it was
100%
bad. It's so bad. It's like, how did this, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be able to get it out of my head.
I'm like, stunned that this exists. I'm stunned that it exists.
Yeah. I also think that, like, honestly, the old woman at the end terrified me. I jumped. I spilled tea. Like, seeing her face and how it freaked me out. And I was like, this could be the prequel to, like, I don't know, The Nun or A Scary Movie or something. They could have given us just a little more background of, like, maybe we saw a picture of her mom being a nun back in the day. I don't know. But this movie just, I don't think I can't not forget this movie after seeing it, if that makes sense.
I'll check in after a couple of days, because a lot of these things you guys are talking about, like The Angel and stuff, I was like, I didn't even remember Alan Menken was in the credits, and I, like, did freak out about that when I saw it.
Well, I'm sure the good people at the Convex Group run his portfolios, so I'm sure they were able to get Alan Menken in on the cheap.
I'm sure this was a tax write-off for them.
And for the good people of Italy who came out in crowds to see this film. It seemed like every 5 minutes something happened, and I was truly baffled that that's where it was going. I mean, I already made my very bad, like, this Alan Arkin want to fuck Paul Walker joke, and then it turned out to be true. But, like, I mean, it's like, and then there's the moment where, like, Susan Sarandon crashes Penelope Cruz's family's party, and I'm like, she's not gonna actually go. She's gonna try to. Okay, cool. I mean, it seemed like every few minutes there was a thing where I'm like, they're not really gonna. They're gonna do it. They're going for it. And I just that all goes back to, I think, what you were saying is, like, I can't believe this movie got made, and I'm also not surprised to know that there's not, like, a discernible U.S. box office that you can find, because I just had never heard of this movie before. I really have no idea.
Did you look into the Flex Play thing that this movie's affiliated with?
I thought that was amazing. So I did not. So, and just for Kieran and Melissa, who might not know what that is. So in the Rotten Tim, or not the Rotten, the IMDb trivia, this is what it says. After the limited theatrical release, it was released as the launch title for Flex Play, the 48-hour non-returnable DVD disc.
Oh, what?
Wait.
Well, in 2004, what we were all hankering for was, like, it's cool I can rent DVDs, but it would be cool if it was, like, accepting a job in Mission Impossible style, where, like, it blew up after 2 days.
Oh, it just you destroy it after 2 days? Like, it's...
I looked into it. It had some sort of, like, resin encoded into it. So after you cracked the seal on the disc, you had 48 hours before this resin set in on the disc itself and made it unplayable.
Oh, wow. My God.
Okay. In 2004, FlexPlay was purchased by the Convex Group.
Oh.
Who also owned other brands associated with it. There you go. There you go.
This is like some weird Ring shit where it's like you watch the movie and... Oh my God. Wow.
Well, we still have 48 hours. okay. Mike's 48 hours is up, so
Or you can... Oh, I can't watch it again.
Did you wait, hold on. Now hold on. Before I you didn't pay to watch this, did you?
No, I got it on Tubi.
Okay, good, good. Tubi.
Jinx.
For people like us, Tubi is great.
I'm more concerned that 48 hours, some apparition's going to crawl out of my screen and come after me now. Because it's
we'll check.
You're good. I'm in the clear.
We'll shoot you a text in a while and make sure you're still doing good. So Tubi, I don't watch a lot on Tubi. It's typically just the bad movies that we have to find on there.
I mean, I feel like I have a jillion more things to say, but I also don't know.
Well, you took so many notes. He was on like two pages, and I'm sitting here going, I don't know where to start. Like, I just didn't know where to start taking notes.
I mean, okay, Paul Walker, his New York accent, tree decorator, he's gay. I wrote with an exclamation point because that was how that went. 30 minutes in, why is it called Noel? What is Alan Arkin doing? Susan Sarandon just crashed Cruz's family's party. I don't know why I found it so irritating that they were going to get married on New Year's Eve. That just bugged me. Did the partner just try to bring two prostitutes over?
He sure did.
I said Ryan Phillippe. That's not the actor. Paul Walker is the actor. like,
your fiance that you might be like broken up with.
I half think that partner thought she was there, and we're just all gonna get down tonight. I just thought that's what he thought.
Oh man,
because I don't know.
Because it's Christmas Eve.
Oh, because it's Christmas Eve. Yes, we had a running joke. Given the way that Daniel Sunjata was just going after Susan Sarandon, we had a running bit going as we were watching it that it's Christmas Eve, and on Christmas Eve you just say yes. We meant that sexually, God. And so we thought maybe just to continue that trend, there was just going to be a big old orgy up in the Cruz Walker household. Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea. Because it's Christmas, and on Christmas you tell the truth. That's from Love Actually. That's when he's doing the
cards.
I'm really on a weird tangent there. I should probably stop talking.
my savior was Penelope Cruz in this, for her wonderful dancing and her attempt at making her character have some emotional depth, at least.
I cannot wait to hear all of these, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm really excited to hear everybody's savior. Okay, so we have Penelope Cruz. Mike, who is your savior of the movie?
It's also Penelope Cruz, basically for those same reasons. Kind of seems like quasi like a human being. I really, really wanted it to be Susan Sarandon. I really wanted that like monologue she has with Robin Williams about like my mom doesn't know she's my mom. I wanted that to be kind of a standout moment, but I was just like, there's so much other stuff. She just dead eyes her way through that I had to side with Cruz on this one.
Yeah, that script hung her out to dry in this movie, Susan Sarandon. She was like the pitcher that just they're just throwing him out there, and you got to finish the game no matter what happens here. Wouldn't care if your arm falls off.
This was a tough game for me. This was another I hate you, Adam St. John moment, because I kept looking for my savior of the film. And I also really wanted it to be Robin Williams, because I love Robin Williams. But he goes off on his things of like, your mom visited me. And all of a sudden, this thing becomes not about how Susan Sarandon doesn't take care of herself. It's about her conflict of faith, which, why is it about that all of a sudden? I just like everybody who I was like, oh, you're my savior of the movie, has this moment that lets me down. So
it's like a hot potato.
Penelope Cruz. Yes. They keep looking for ways to fuck it up.
My savior of the movie is Alan Arkin. Oh, was that yours?
That was mine. It sure was. Particularly the moment where Paul Walker is trying to push his partner out the door, and the last we saw, Alan Arkin was sitting at the table, but now he's standing, and
this is right there.
Goes for it, like. really just kind of shifted the entire movie.
I that was the moment for me too. Yeah. Where Alan Arkin hard goes in for that kiss, I was like, this is amazing. Alan Arkin, esteemed actor Alan Arkin, is just trying to get his Mac on with Paul Walker. I thought like, that was incredible. That was an incredible. That's cinema history, gentlemen. I'm just telling you. So there are many answers for this next question. What is this movie missing? What would have made this movie just a little bit more enjoyable? I'm going to start with Melissa this time.
Okay.
Because we'll go reverse.
Well, you know, I'm going to go back to the whole name, Noelle.
Mm.
They should have either really played that song loud and proud, where everybody can hear it, or they should have somehow linked all the names, because there were like four main storylines, weren't there?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, they should have linked them. Like, Nina, there's the N. The O could have been Oscar. It could have been the...
Sure.
I'm just making up a name
now. Yeah, why not?
It could have been that guy who broke his hand, or he would have been the Oscar.
Okay.
The E, Elizabeth, would have been the Susan Sarandon character. And Luke.
For Paul Walker.
Yeah.
There it is.
There
great.
You go.
Great.
And then it would have been like, oh my gosh, I get it.
Yes. That yes. And all of the sense would have been made at that point.
I would have been fine.
The thing that I thought that this movie was missing... And there are a couple ways that I could go with this, but the real answer is just a little more clarification as to what the fuck's going on with Jules. I just wanted something more with Jules. I think what it was missing was like just that very sad mom. It's Jules, and then like just cut, like just like just so we know that he made contact. Do you know what I mean? Like just that would have.
And then we cut to Louise Fletcher.
Yeah, exactly.
And there you go.
Exactly. Mike, what was this movie missing?
I've kind of already said it, but I think like commitment to some sort of like supernatural thing going on, because they've already introduced it with Robin Williams' whole thing, and I just feel like if the movie is about these group of people who are suffering, who are in pain, and the whole point is like on Christmas Eve they'll find the thing they need to change and be a better person, I just feel like if they've gone in with Robin Williams, can astral project out of his body and communicate with the mother who has Alzheimer's, like why can't there be something like that for everybody? Just to make it a little more magical.
I mean, that would
interesting.
You know, and another thing that we could have gotten was like Robin Williams, like bumping into Paul Walker, who says, "Hey, hey, tell Artie that his wife, you know, that she's okay or whatever." Like, because we could have roped that in too. Like, oh my God, some real closure instead of just Paul Walker pretending to be the reincarnated version of his wife and saying, "I forgive you," or whatever the fuck he says, because that happens too.
Well, that's what I want. I want Paul Walker to actually be the
that would have been great.
I want him to come to that realization and have those memories.
So what I'm hearing is you love this movie.
It's my favorite movie.
Yeah, I figured.
All right. It's a cinema must.
And Kieran,
it's a wonderful what?
Kieran, the most fresh with this film. What is it missing? What do you think this movie needs?
So like I kept like asking myself, and I even had to check a few times, like, is this trying to at least be a little bit of a comedy? Like, and it's not, but it feels like I mean, there's some things in there that couldn't just have been meant to be played dramatically, like whether it's Chaz Palminteri's inclusion in this or the Jules character. Like, it seemed like they were maybe hinting for a little bit of comedic relief, but the tone never went there. And so I don't know, maybe like if you tie into your last episode, maybe like a Vince Vaughn in the middle of this thing, who's just playing a comedic type of role, give us a little levity in the middle, and just maybe just a little more balance with things. This movie was very, very imbalanced. Like it was seemingly about Susan Sarandon with a Paul Walker, Penelope Cruz, and a side of Alan Arkin's storyline going on. You know,
and just a dash of Jules.
Well, right? And then you
and
have
just a little dash.
You have like Susan Sarandon and Penelope Cruz meet, but then it was like a interesting meeting, and then you never see them again together, which I also thought was kind of sloppy. Like, I'm like, wait, what? Now I know on like a couple hours went by in this movie. Like, it wasn't like weeks long, but still I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, like, what did Susan Sarandon's storyline have to do with Paul Walker and Penelope Cruz's storyline? They really didn't.
No, they needed that scene to somehow get it to connect.
And it they just kind of met at this Christmas party.
Yeah.
Weirdly. It doesn't make any sense. The movie makes, and what does Jules have to do with any of them? Like, it's a very strange, very strange movie. So they just
like
needed to do a lot of things.
Somebody owed a lot of people favors to put people in this movie, maybe.
I think Chaz Palminteri used everyone he had.
Yeah, I think this was the favor.
And the good people at the Convex group knew what they had on their hand. And just like, they figured they had the next. I agree with Mike. I think the Convex group think they had the next Love Actually. And they were like, we got this. We got
and it will
this.
Launch our genius idea of flex play.
I think the best thing that came out of watching this movie was finding out about
flex play.
My God, that's going to haunt me.
That's going to haunt me.
Hard to believe it didn't last, but this is the launch title.
Does anybody have anything left unsaid they need to say? I'd hate to leave a stone unturned with this movie.
I think
I'm tapped.
I think we put more thought into this pod than they did in that movie.
I will say, like, from the moment it started and it said the Convex group presents, and then the camera pans down and the first store I see is Abercrombie and Fitch. And then Susan Sarandon has this awkward scene with this friend from high school. I was like, this is going to be terrible. But like, is it going to be terrible in the way in which like a really boring movie is terrible, or terrible in the way that I would want it to be? And so as we get into the final question, which is, do you think this is a good bad movie or a bad bad movie? I will answer first. I think this was a good bad movie. I mean, it is insane. It is absolutely insane, this movie. And I enjoyed all of the insanity. I mean, it's not like if this had been if this had been a certain Oscar contendery movie for this year and ended and I was like, what the fuck was that? I didn't like this garbage at all. I'd be upset because I'm expecting more from it. But this, I don't know, man. I think when you search worst Christmas movies and this is what you get, I was like, this is kind of exactly what I was hoping for.
Wait, is that what you searched?
Yes.
You searched worst Christmas movies and this was on there.
It was on the list. It sure was.
That's amazing.
That's fantastic.
So I have a buddy who does every year, he just crushes as many Christmas movies as he can, you know, and that's his last year. I think he did about like 40 and he's on his roll again this year and he ranks them all. So I told him I was going on for this and I'm like, it's called Noel. It's on Tubi. He goes, done. I'll watch it. No problem. He came back at me and was like, dude, that probably was the worst movie I've ever seen. He's like, I didn't think a movie could be worse than Ernest Saves Christmas, but this one was. So these are his bottom five. So I'll just throw them out of you.
God,
love
I
lists.
Love this.
This is good.
You love lists, Adam.
I do love lists.
Yeah. So these are his bottom five. And I'm not sure if they're in order. I think they may. But Arthur's Christmas. I think Arthur is the cartoon.
Sure, Arthur. Yeah,
he watched that with his daughter, and she demanded that he turned it off. So I think he agreed with her. That's one of the worst. The aforementioned Ernest Saves Christmas. Noel.
Hey,
now,
there
is
we
in
go.
The, in the
there
roost.
It is.
Now, these other two I don't know, but maybe you guys do in your below freezing travels. Christmas Survival and A Christmas Cruise.
Ooh, okay. I don't know
I've
either.
Heard of Christmas Cruise.
Okay, and those two are apparently worse than Noel.
Oh, okay.
Christmas Cruise and Christmas Survival. So there you go. Maybe next Christmas we have our leading candidates.
Who wants to go next?
Kieran.
Yeah, boy. I mean, I have to echo Melissa in saying how is this made? And more importantly, how does this exist? Like, how is this a thing? How is this an entity in the ether? Like, how is this something that you can just pop up Tubi and throw on? It's completely insane. to me as well, Adam. It's a bad movie. It's a real bad movie. It isn't like a I'm checking my watch kind of bad. It isn't like a ugh, this is unbearable kind of bad. This is like a baffling bad. Like so I guess that there's some good to that, but I can't also call it a good bad movie either. So I'm just going to cop out and call it an insane bad movie. We'll put it that way. All right.
Yeah.
I don't know if we had one of those before.
Any qualifier before the word bad is totally fine.
You know,
it's
I thought
good.
You were going to go with like this was a baffling bad movie, which I think I'm going to go with that because it.
I like it.
Yes, it's. I will try to introduce this into as many people's lives as I can.
Wow.
Honestly,
so getting, like room quality.
Yes. Like I just think there's. With the with the cast in this movie, and then the movie that you get, it's just like, how?
Great question.
And to end a movie like that, I'm like, it's not bad, bad. But yeah, it's not good, bad. So baffling, bad. I love it.
Cool. Yeah. Mike, round us out. I know you were the biggest supporter of the film when we started.
I love it.
So.
It's my favorite movie. That's what you're going to say.
Yeah, so it's a great bad movie. I'll go, bad. I don't see myself recommending it out to anybody. I think if I'm going after a bad Christmas movie to have fun and laugh about, like, I'm going with Ernest Saves Christmas over this. So I think I've had it with Noel.
Oh, poor Noel. We hardly knew ye, and we really didn't because I have no idea what Noel stood for.
Yeah.
So I think we just wanted to get right into talking about this movie. So as we get ready to say goodbye, if you two would like to, you know, unabashedly plug the pods that you are on. Mike, I'll have you go first. What do you do in the podcasting world?
I compete with you, Running Cinemust, which is another show that talks about movies in the book 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die. So we'll be having a special episode because we just crossed 100 episodes unknowingly with the same movie. Well, not the same movie, but our 100th episode, much like Below Freezing's, is on Planet of the Apes, but ours is on the good
one.
Oh,
that's really funny. I didn't clock that at all. That's great.
Oh my gosh.
So we'll be doing like a little special episode with Adam and Kieran here. We're going to be talking about essential movies that lost Best Picture at the Oscars. It'll be kind of a top 10-y kind of show, and soon enough we'll be getting back to the regular thing, just talking about movies and whether we think they're essential.
Lovely. And Kieran, what do you do besides guest on, I think, every movie podcast that is in existence?
What is it you do here? So to shout out that 100th episode, you guys did a great job. I had a lot of fun listening to that, particularly the second half of it where you kind of did a little retrospective. And I appreciated the revisionist love for Mixed Nuts that it got. You know, you went back and kind of both adjusted your scores a bit for it.
We did.
Oh my God. Honestly, you will always have to be on Christmas episodes with us. Like, you're just part of the family
it.
Now for Christmas because we're like after that episode.
Amazing. Best Picture Cast. You can get it wherever you get your pods, just as it sounds. Best Picture Cast. We cover all the Best Picture winners. All three of you guys have been guests on it before. We kind of sit around. We don't take ourselves too seriously. We have a beverage or two, and we talk the film to death, basically. We deep dive it. We go through it. We're about two-thirds of the way through our Best Picture winners as we're chugging along. We have our Christmas episode coming out, and it's going to be A Muppet's Christmas Carol. So that one will be coming out probably around the same time this one's out. And we're approaching our fourth anniversary, and that's February 1st. We do a different war movie every year for our anniversary, war Best Picture winner. So this time we're doing Hurt Locker. So it'll be Hurt Locker this year.
Okay.
Yeah, so that,
I love that
should
movie.
Be interesting. And so that's it. So check us out. And the back catalog, the new one's coming out. We drop every other week at the beginning of the week. So you can look forward to another crazy year of Best Picture Cast.
Well, lovely. And yes, and we've guested on the shows before and cannot recommend Cinemusts and Best Picture Cast enough. And we also can be heard on places where you find podcasts. They all have big names. I'm sure you'll find them. If you don't have a place where you listen to podcasts and you're listening to this, you've somehow, you've gone to the plane where Robin Williams is right now in this movie. And you've gotten around Spotify somehow. Anyways, though, Mike, Kieran, thank you so much for coming on to talk about the insane New York-based, Montreal-based film that we just watched. I actually think this is like the end of our season. I've said that two times in a row now, and I just don't even know when it's going to be true. But we are, I think we're actually going to take a break after this. I say that.
You say that, but I think I have one more movie.
Okay. Well, that might be the start of our fifth season.
Oh, okay.
But who knows? Doesn't matter. We'll figure it out.
We'll see. Wild card.
More shenanigans are definitely in the future. But until our next shitty film, I am Adam.
And I'm Melissa.
And thanks for tuning in.